Hello, and welcome to the RSOL podcast, where self-discovery becomes the guiding light towards a life filled with purpose and spiritual sovereignty. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider clicking the link in our RSS feed and donating to our work to help us keep this amazing work moving forward. So today, I'm going to be sharing with you my personal journey, and I hope that it might help some of you who feel like you are lost in your own life. You might feel like you can't find your soul's purpose, or you haven't been able to find the spiritual connection that you desire. Whatever it is that brings you here, welcome. And I hope this episode will help you on your soul's journey. So to begin, I was the first child born into a very devout Mormon family. My ancestry goes back to the very beginnings of the Mormon Church. We lived in Utah, in the middle of Mormondom, and so my childhood seemed very average to me as far as religion was concerned, at least. I didn't realize the extreme level of scrupulosity or religious OCD that my parents struggled with until I was an adult. As a preteen, I remember my father yelling at me because at Sunday dinner, I got a separate plate for my Jell-O so that it didn't melt into my mashed potatoes and gravy. I didn't really want green Jell-O mixed with mashed potatoes and gravy, which I personally think is fairly normal, but my dad flipped out. My parents expected absolute perfection out of me, and it was painful, exhausting, and left me feeling worthless. At 8 years old, I was made to come back to scrub the entire bathroom 6 times because it wasn't good enough. And that happened often. I mean, I was very young. I was given chores and I would have to repeat the chores many times over because I missed a spot or it wasn't good enough. When I was 10 years old, I was learning to play the piano. They didn't pay attention to the fact that I was playing Beethoven at my piano recital 6 months after beginning lessons. My piano teacher told them most students took 6 years to get to this point. But my dad was more concerned with the fact that he thought I played too loud or I played too fast. My grandmother also complained often that I played the piano too loud or too fast. They always found something wrong with what I was doing. No matter what I did as a child, I couldn't measure up to the impossible standard that was set for me. In school, I thought I was stupid because my dad was always upset about my grades. His reaction caused me to believe all my life up until I was in my 30s that my grades must have been like C's and D's or something because he was always angry. But when I was in my 30s, I found an old report card in the basement of my home with a lot of things from my childhood. And I was shocked to see that my grades were mostly A's with one or two B's. And the only C I ever received in elementary school was in handwriting. As an adult, I realized that my handwriting wasn't that great, but I'm ambidextrous and I can write equally with both hands. I saw that as a bonus rather than a negative. I lived with extremely intense expectations of perfectionism from everyone around me. My parents, my grandmothers, my mom's sister, who was the only aunt that I saw more than a couple times a year. I remember my aunt accusing me of swearing when I said, "Oh my gosh." I was probably 10 years old at the time, I'm guessing. I told her that I didn't take the Lord's name in vain, but she said that I was, quote, trying to, and that was just as bad, and that I shouldn't say, "Oh my gosh." It wasn't until I was about 14 years old in seminary, so in Mormon religion or in LDS religion, everyone starts seminary at usually around the age of 14 in ninth grade, and you go to seminary all through high school. And it was there that I was introduced to the church's history of polygamy. Up until this point, I had no idea. This is not taught at church, and no one talks about it, at least as far as I was ever aware. I was shocked and horrified at the thought. I found out as a teenager that Joseph Smith was also marrying teenage girls, and this disgusted me. Despite the disgust I had for Joseph Smith, I was so indoctrinated that I had to just push it aside, or put it on the proverbial shelf, as they say. From that time forward, polygamy was a very heavy, painful topic for me. I couldn't even say the word. In my later teen years, I started calling polygamous marriages human breeding farms instead. In my late 20s, I decided to adopt a plant-based diet or become vegan. And I know that this can be very controversial for a lot of people. People get very emotional about their food. But regardless of what you think about that, my father literally lost his mind. I remember being over at their house for some reason. I don't know why. This was a long time ago. I don't know where my husband was or where my two little children were, but my father was yelling at the top of his lungs. I mean, I thought people down the street would be able to hear him. What was his concern? That I would become, quote, a liberal idiot, that I would become, quote, a tree hugger, and wait for it, it would cause me to leave the church. And there it was. That was his concern. Somehow he was leading me down this path from not eating meat to leaving the church. My parents' religious OCD was extreme. They are not aware of it, but it is very extreme. The thought of any of their children leaving the church was the worst thing that could ever happen to them. If you leave the LDS church, according to LDS theology, you are considered an apostate, which gives you a one-way ticket to their version of hell or outer darkness. Some LDS members think it means you go to the second kingdom of heaven for people who were good people but didn't believe in the one true church. So you don't get to be with God, but you get to be in kind of a nice place. But you don't get to live with your family if you go to this second kingdom. You live alone. You are separated from God. You are separated from all of your family. You just live alone, but it's a nice place. It's called the terrestrial kingdom. So it depends. Different members believe different things. The theology is not super clear in the way that they talk about apostates, but the original, especially Brigham Young, taught that if you were an apostate, you went to outer darkness. So a lot of LDS members think that you would go to the terrestrial kingdom if you leave the church. And that's a cute thought, but it's not accurate. Apostates, or people who leave the church, do go to outer darkness as far as theology is concerned. But regardless of what an LDS member's understanding of the fate of an apostate is, if someone leaves the church, they will be eternally separated from their family. And my parents' religious OCD and obsession with perfectionism in part stems from this fear of eternally losing their family or losing their children. I didn't grow up with a normal relationship with my parents. My mom, her father left when she was about 11 years old. And in the divorce, he just signed away all of his parental rights. They saw him a little bit in the beginning, and then he just never came around again and has never had a relationship with them all their lives. And so my mom has this obsession with her heavenly father, and she internalized as an 11-year-old girl that the reason her father left was because she wasn't perfect enough, that she wasn't good enough. And, you know, back in the 1960s, children's feelings were not considered ever. They just told them, don't cry, don't talk to your mom about this, you know, your mom's having a hard time and you guys just need to be obedient and good children. And that was very typical attitude of the 60s. They didn't receive any counseling, they did not receive any help. And my mom internalized this idea that she was the problem, and that it was because she wasn't good enough, and that's why her dad didn't want her. And so she has turned to religious OCD in this obsession of being perfect enough for her heavenly father so that she can have this perfect loving father for eternity in heaven. And this obsession led my mom is in scripture study groups, she goes to adult institute classes, she goes to Education Week, she goes to women's conferences. my mom was constantly, she has served in the temple for decades. She will actually miss family parties in order to serve in the temple. She has a little, I think what most Christians would understand is like a Bible study group of women in her neighborhood. And my brother came to visit. He lives in a different state. My mom hadn't seen him in 4 or 5 months. He came to stay with my parents. And my mom had her scripture study group that night. And she had made a dinner for my sister and both of my brothers. I wasn't able to come because I live about 2 hours away. My mom left. She made the dinner and she left because she had her scripture study group. My parents' relationship with you is based on your religious observance. It's based on family parties, but they don't get to know you as a person because they're not concerned about that. They're concerned about your salvation. That's literally my parents' only concern is our salvation. And so that was their source of this OCD of trying to make us be perfect. And there was a lot of kind of guilt trips and control and lack of a normal, healthy parent-child relationship because, basically because of their religious OCD. When I got married, the only time they would call me was to invite me to Sunday dinner, me and my husband to Sunday dinner, to a family party or for, you know, holidays or something like that. They were not concerned with having a relationship with me. My parents know me on a very surface level, but they don't know much about my life. Getting to know me or understand me as a person, now that I'm married, I'm an adult, that was not of concern to them. Their only concern was that I was attending Sunday dinners, family parties, and my status in the church. The deep relationship or anything like that was not of concern. So another difficult experience I had in the church was my first time going to the temple. The interview that I had with my stake president, so you have to have an interview with a bishop and then an interview with a stake president to determine your worthiness to go to the temple. And it was during the interview that I had with stake president to get my temple recommend for my endowment and then my subsequent marriage. It was absolutely horrifying. So he told me that as a woman, I had never had a connection to God. But now that I would be marrying a righteous man who had the priesthood, I would now have a connection to God through him, and what a blessing that would be to me. And I was like sitting there feeling heat come up in my face and just so much anger of like, God doesn't want to have a connection with me because I'm a woman. Like, I was so confused. And he drew a circle on the whiteboard behind him. And that circle was indicating me. And then next to me, he drew a circle indicating my husband. And then directly above that circle indicating my husband was God. And he drew a line straight from God to my husband and said that God would speak to my husband. And then my husband, and then he drew a line from my husband to me and said my husband would tell me what God told him. And I was almost in tears at this point, just thinking, God didn't want a relationship with me as a woman. God wouldn't speak to me or answer my prayers. It had to come through my husband. I felt completely and utterly worthless at the end of this interview. I left that interview feeling as though God hated me and wanted nothing to do with me. I was a 19-year-old girl at this time, by the way, that I was getting married. So I went to receive my endowment 1 week before my wedding. And keep in mind that if I leave this ceremony at any point, or I do not agree to make all of these covenants, I would not be allowed to marry my fiance, and his family would put extreme pressure on him to break off the engagement because this endowment is necessary for both of our salvation. And so if I'm not endowed and a believing member as his wife, he can't even get into heaven. So this is a big deal. And of course, I'm a fully believing member at this point, but I just want to stress this because there are covenants. You don't know what you're going to covenant till you get there. And they'll tell you in the beginning, if you don't want to make these covenants, you can leave. But again, you don't know what they are. And so you just sit there. I knew absolutely nothing about what was going to happen in the temple that day. or even what I would be covenanting to do. I'm not going to explain in every detail about my temple experience. If you want me to go into more detail about that, you can comment and let me know. But all I'm going to say is, as a sexual abuse survivor, there were aspects of the temple that were very upsetting to me. And I'll just leave it at that. But the experience of having to veil my face in the presence of God because I was a woman was oppressive and demeaning. I also had to covenant to obey the law of my husband. Yes, those were the exact words. I covenanted with God to obey the law of my husband. In my mind, I was thinking, I'm not doing that. I am not doing that. I do not agree with this. But in order to marry my husband, I had to do what I had to do. So I bowed my head and said yes anyway. But in my mind, I was thinking, God, I am not agreeing to this. And that's what you would do. You covenant to obey the law of your husband. You bow your head and say yes. As it continued, my future husband was promised to be a king and priest to the Most High God as his ultimate reward in heaven. But as a woman, I was promised to be a queen and priestess to my husband. This was also deeply disturbing to me. When we went in to, because I don't have a connection to God. My connection to God is through my husband. So I'm a queen to my husband. My husband is the king to God, right? That was deeply upsetting to me. In the marriage ceremony, the woman, it's only like 5 minutes long. It's very, very quick. They give you some advice in the beginning. It's like a 5 minute little thing. There are no rings. There's no kiss. There's none of that. You do not write your vows. There's nothing. It's like a 5 minute ceremony and they tell you what it is and that's it. But basically you give yourself to your husband and he receives you unto himself and that's it. And the reason that he doesn't give himself to you or promise himself to you in any way, shape, or form during this ceremony is that he can have as many women as he wants in the eternities. And so he receives you unto himself, but he could also receive 5, 10, 20, 100, however many other women he wants to receive. And so this was deeply disturbing to me as well. I didn't even know what the wedding would look like. There's nothing unique about it. You are not allowed to wear your wedding dress there. It's just a 5 minute quick ceremony in a little room. You can maybe have 25 guests, 12 on the groom side, 12 on the other. None of my siblings were able to come. But as a believing member, you just try to make excuses. No, it's beautiful. The temple's beautiful. It's pretty. We're married. It's wonderful. But in reality, it was rough for me. That part of getting married haunted me forever, that I gave myself to my husband and he doesn't give himself to me. That for some reason just hit me really hard. I realized how deeply entrenched polygamy is in this religion, which was really hard and disturbing to me. I had my first faith crisis when I was about 32 years old. I had become aware that according to LDS canonized scripture, polygamy was required to enter heaven or the celestial kingdom. And this was actually taught in a Sunday school lesson at church. And I couldn't bear the thought of being forced to live this way for eternity. I did not realize that in DNC section 132, it is very clear that polygamy is required for the celestial kingdom, and that was taught from the pulpit by, I believe, the first 8 prophets of the LDS church. Most people are not aware of this, but I have found them in the Journal of Discourses, and it is very, very, very clear that this is the teaching and this is the belief. So I began looking into every other Christian denomination that I could think of, but I couldn't find one that I felt I could join. I kept this faith crisis to myself and didn't tell anyone for fear of the backlash. At this time, it was common for families to encourage divorce if one spouse left the church. In fact, it was very common for that to happen. And the reason is, in LDS theology, or Mormon theology, marriage is a requirement to enter heaven or the celestial kingdom. So if one spouse leaves the church, the other spouse that is still an active member cannot go to heaven. So your ability to get into heaven is completely dependent upon your spouse, which is a horrible theology, but this is what it is. So as I have left the Mormon church, I have realized how common it is that divorce happens when one spouse leaves the church. It is extremely common because you can't get into heaven with a spouse that's not a believing member. And so a lot of people say you need to get divorced and you need to find a believing member so that you can actually get into the celestial kingdom. It's absolutely a ridiculous thought, but that's what it is, and it has created a lot of problems in a lot of marriages. And so I put this heavy subject on the proverbial shelf and tried to move forward because it caused profound anxiety for me. There were times the thought of dying was absolutely terrifying to me. I knew that if I died young, my husband could get sealed to someone else. And if that happened, I would be forced to either live in polygamy for eternity or to accept a lower heaven and lose my family, my children, and live alone for eternity. Those were my two options. If you die young and your husband, he gets to decide if he wants to be sealed to someone else. You do not have a choice. And so basically your choice is to live in that polygamous relationship forever, or if you don't want to live in the celestial kingdom in polygamy forever, you can go to the terrestrial kingdom. You will lose all of your family, your children, and live alone for eternity. It's supposed to be a decent place. It's not hell, but you live alone. So no matter how you look at it, heaven was a horrible place for women. But I pressed forward. I read my scriptures an hour every single morning. I read conference talks. I got to the point for about 8 years. I was reading scripture for an hour every morning, and then I didn't have a job, of course. I'm a stay-at-home mom. My kids were teenagers at this point. So I was studying for 2 hours, an hour of scripture study every morning, an hour of studying conference talks every morning. I was taking notes. I was reading all of the footnotes of the conference talks, all of those talks, all of those scriptures, taking notes. I had notebooks everywhere. I took notes at every general conference. I was all in, and I believed the church was true despite all these painful teachings. But in my 40s, I started realizing that Mormon heaven was not heaven for women. A lot of women in the church started asking about the doctrine of Heavenly Mother, which is the LDS version of the feminine divine, which there have been, you know, the feminine divine was even worshipped in the Old Testament. Most people don't know that, but it's true. The church cracked down and told women they were not allowed to pray to her, they were not allowed to worship her, they were not allowed to speak about her in church. We know she exists, but you need to leave it at that. And if you understand LDS theology at all, every woman in the church will become a heavenly mother who creates spirit children to populate the worlds her husband creates. That's LDS theology. So a woman will become a heavenly mother in heaven. That's your ultimate goal. But unlike LDS theology on womanhood on earth, a woman's highest calling in life is to be a mother. And her primary responsibility in life is to nurture her children, according to the family proclamation. But Heavenly Mother, on the other hand, she creates the children, but once they're sent to earth, they will never know of her. She has absolutely no involvement in their life. They are forbidden from speaking about her or to her. They cannot pray to her. They cannot worship her. She is a silent, invisible mother. And I really started to struggle with this theology, that as a woman in heaven, I would be invisible. I would be banned from having any contact with my own children, eternally relegated to be silent and unknown. There was nothing about this theology that equates to an eternal reward for a righteous believing woman. It sounds like hell to me, honestly. And you probably will be in polygamy because according to the first 8 prophets of Mormondom, that's required. for entering the celestial kingdom, and now they've changed it and they say it's not, and they bounce all over the place. It's like you don't even know what you're going to end up being, but none of it sounds good. I started to research more about the Heavenly Mother theology, which I quickly learned was not anything special or even unique the way that they claim. This theology was born out of Joseph Smith's perverse desire to be married to 34 to 40 women in the celestial kingdom. Well, if you're going to be married in heaven and become a god, then obviously God has got to have a wife too. There are many LDS members who believe God is a polygamist who has many wives. Heavenly Mother is not a respected goddess. The idea of her was born out of polygamy and the desire for polygamy in heaven. She becomes necessary for God to be God, but other than that, she is absolutely worthless. We have no need for her other than the fact that she created our spirit so we could come to earth. But while we're on earth, we have no need of a Heavenly Mother. We have no need of her at all. She is a moot point in LDS theology, which that really bothered me. As I continued reading only faithful sources for church history, my faith began to unravel, even with faithful sources. The Gospel Topics essays on the Book of Abraham completely admit that it was not a translation at all. In fact, the original text that was found in this coffin with this mummy that Joseph Smith purchased was an Egyptian funeral text or funerary text, and it was written about 1,000 years after Abraham. So the Book of Abraham was nothing more than a fabrication. The more I dug, the more I realized that this religion is completely fabricated and false. I found the documents in the Joseph Smith papers where Joseph Smith is ordained to the priesthood by none other than Lyman White, not the resurrected Peter, James, and John like the church teaches in Sunday school or over the pulpit. It was extremely frightening to have the religion I grew up in unravel right before my eyes. In a panic, I quickly turned to Christianity and thought I would find a home there. I actually enrolled in a Christian college to study theology. I was horrified at what I found. Christian theology about women is even worse than Mormon theology. I had no idea. This is what I learned in a Christian college. Because Eve was foolish and deceived, all women are foolish and easily deceived. This is why God requires patriarchy, to prevent women from foolishly deceiving others. Patriarchy was required by God. A woman is not allowed to speak in public in any religious capacity unless it is only to other women or children. And even then, everything she says must be approved by both her husband and her pastor first. The man is the head of the woman. He is the spiritual leader of the home, and when he makes a decision, that is the final word, and the wife must submit. In my pastoral training, I was taught that if an abused woman came to me wanting to divorce her husband due to physical violence, I was to tell her that God hates divorce, and she should not divorce him. I could advise her to either submit to him better, and maybe the abuse will stop, or if she feels that she's in physical danger, she can separate from him until he can manage his anger. So the professor teaching this had a PhD and advised that it would even be okay for her to live separated from her husband for the rest of her life if he wasn't able to get over his abuse and physical violence. They could live separated for the rest of their lives, but they should not get divorced. This is what I'm being taught, okay? And this is in 2023. In pastoral counseling, the solution to most marital problems was the wife submitting to the husband's authority. And if you notice in Christian theology, this is the way that all marriage problems are solved, is that basically the wife is a literal doormat. You do not... Like, if you agree with your husband, great. But the minute that you and your husband have different ideas about something or different beliefs about something, you submit to his will. You submit to his authority. That's the solution to everything. And what a great marriage that is for the men, Because everything that they want, everything that they believe, the way that if a wife doesn't like the fact that her husband whips her children with a belt as punishment, she has to submit to his authority. Because he is the head of the household, he is the authority, and whatever it is that he is doing is fine. You could have a woman, not that this would probably happen in fundamental Christian circles, but you could have a woman who had like a PhD in child development, okay? And the husband is like abusing the children as punishment and raising them. And this wife is like, you know what? This is abuse. This is not right. This will be damaging to the children. And as a PhD in child development, she's telling her husband this. And guess what? Husband is the head of the household. Husband is the authority. Whatever he says goes. And you have to submit to him, even if you do, in fact, know better than him. That's it. And what I started learning, I mean, I was struggling. I was in a very, very, very difficult place in my spirituality at this point. And my husband was noticing a lot of inner turmoil that I was having over these teachings, because I came to find that Christianity isn't just patriarchal like Mormon church. It's downright misogynistic. And if you know the word misogyny, it actually means more of like a hatred of women. It's not just being domineering or controlling or patriarchal. It's more of a hatred or disdain of women. The idea that women are foolish and easily deceived and must be controlled, and that abuse is not a reason for divorce, and to advise a woman to submit to an abusive husband is misogyny. I was also taught right in Christian college that everything that is wrong in society right now is due to women leaving the home and entering the workplace and trying to have more of a say in the world. And they are deceiving society and they are causing the degeneration of our society. Women are doing this. This is what I'm being taught in Christian college. I was flabbergasted. I was shocked beyond belief that people are teaching this crap, but this is what is being taught. A woman cannot be a spiritual leader of the home or in a church or anywhere else because she's foolish and she's easily deceived, and she will deceive her children and she will deceive her family. They literally believe that a woman spiritually leading her children will lead them down to hell. That is the only direction that a woman's spiritual leading can go, because Eve, and they hate Eve. They literally hate Eve. They think that God had this perfect, beautiful plan, and the first humans that he puts on the earth ruin it. And then God's got to go to backup plan, which I'm like, this all-knowing God was like, oh crap, you just ruined my plan. Like, it was so bizarre. But yeah, a woman leading in any capacity will deceive and lead the people to hell. So that's how they see women. And this is why you'll see men and women both get viciously angry about the idea of a female pastor. Because if you're a female pastor, you're leading everyone to hell. And that's the only way that can go in Christian theology. That's the only way that a woman pastor can lead people is to eternal destruction. So yeah, to give you a bit of background on this next story, we adopted a 6-year-old little girl from China in 2016, and she is blind. She has global developmental delays and intellectual disability. So because in China, disability is viewed in a very negative light, and even a child with a club foot or a cleft palate often will be abandoned there. They have a lot of kind of superstitious beliefs and basically negative beliefs about disability. And there are no services for anyone with disabilities there. So a child that's blind does not receive any intervention whatsoever. And she was just left in a crib. Well, if you can't see anything that's going on around you, when we got her home at 6.5 years old, she didn't even know what a toy was. She was afraid to even touch anything. And so there were no connections made in her brain of what things were or anything before the age of 6 and a half. So she, her intellectual disability really kind of came out of severe neglect. And as I learned about the idea of Christian hell, right, the idea of hell, I was taught that anyone who did not have the opportunity to hear about Jesus Christ on earth will be thrown in hell. The foundational belief of Christianity is that God predestined some people that he created for heaven. And some people that he created them for hell. Like literally, he created you for hell. And so as I was studying this, and I realized my daughter's parents and family who live in a very remote village in very northern China are predestined for hell, according to Christian belief. Because there's no way they will ever learn about God. Why? Because it is illegal in China. It is illegal. Not only that, they live in a very remote village in northern China. They're never going to hear about God. And so this idea that her family is predestined for hell because of this, I can't accept that as true. I just cannot. I did graduate as a commissioned pastor because I wanted to finish what I started. But the teachings of Christianity are misogynistic and absolutely cruel. That's all I can say. Eternal hellfire and damnation simply because you were born on the wrong continent where it is illegal to preach about God? What kind of God is this that creates people just to torment them eternally? I don't understand that. I eventually, after I graduated and could just stop studying this very abusive theology, I found a connection to God outside of organized religion. I began to realize that organized religion is a system of ownership of God. They tell you that your only connection to God is through them. You have to jump through all the hoops that they set for you, pay your tithing, and learn of God through them or go to hell. What I found on the other side of organized religion was a beautiful, peaceful belief and full of absolute and unconditional love. I found a belief system that was beautiful, and I've never felt more joy in my life than I do right now, more peace. I have a beautiful connection to God. I spent my life trying to earn the love of God, being told that I had to check an endless list of boxes. And I'm not talking about being a good person. I'm talking about having callings in church, paying tithing, making covenants in a temple, going to the temple all the time, doing family history, all of that, just stuff, not about being a good person. In order to be acceptable to God, I had to do all of these things. I had to attend the temple regularly. I had to hold callings in church. I had to do family history work. I had to clean the church. I had to read scriptures every day. There were so many boxes that you have to check. And I'm not going to share here my current spiritual beliefs because they're personal to me. And I have found a beautiful relationship with God that I would have never had the opportunity to have in a patriarchal Orthodox religion. But going through this extremely disorienting, painful process gave me a lot more compassion for people of other beliefs. And I don't look at people as lost. And one of the other fundamental doctrines of Christianity that I really struggled with was the doctrine of total depravity. And basically what that means is every human is totally depraved. You are literally not capable of doing any good at all. Every fiber of your being is evil and depraved. And the only way that you ever do something good for another person or say something good or anything good comes out of you is because of Christianity or because of your belief in Jesus or your belief in God. But I didn't believe that. They also teach that you did not exist until your mother became pregnant with you, which I find very interesting. And but from a religious perspective, doesn't really make sense, and I'm not going to go into that. But I understand why the thought of God is so offensive to so many people. And the reason is 100% organized religion has created a God after their own hearts. Men have taken religion and completely perverted it. If you look at Jesus in the Bible, Jesus was anointed for burial by a woman. Jesus first appeared after being resurrected to a woman. It was women that traveled around with him and funded his ministry. He allowed Mary to sit at his feet and learn from him, which they considered Jesus a rabbi and called him this. A disciple or a student of a rabbi that was sitting at their feet learning from them, that was a position for a man. This is why Martha was having a fit about Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus and learning from him. She needs to be in the kitchen like women are supposed to be. And Jesus says, no, she has chosen the good part. She is allowed to be here. When Jesus first proclaimed to be the Messiah, it was to the woman at the well. We see Jesus elevating women everywhere. We have Phoebe, who was a deacon minister in the church, who took Paul's letter to the Romans. We have Phoebe, who was chief among the apostles. We have many women leaders in the early church, which was ended at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. When we start having the Orthodox Church and the beginnings of the Catholic Church trying to gain control over the religion. And when we turned from women being able to be leaders in the church to only men. And they used very, very wildly taken out of context scriptures in order to do that. They have created a God after their own hearts that honors men and subjugates women. They have created a God that is misogynistic, oppressive of women, hateful, vengeful, a God that predestines people to an eternity of never-ending suffering solely because they were born somewhere where Christianity is illegal or unknown. If you've ever been introduced to the God of Christianity, I completely understand why you cannot bear to hear the word God without shuddering inside at the thought. I understand now. I have developed my own connection to God, my own beliefs outside of organized religion, and they're beautiful and bring a lot of peace to me. And I wanted to help you understand the journey that I went through. It was very painful, and yes, I did become a commissioned pastor. But And some of the things that I learned, I still hold dear. But the misogynistic, oppressive, hateful, vengeful God, I have left behind. Christianity does not like you to talk about a God of love. They don't like it. But that is all I've ever found since I have stepped out of organized religion. And my journey has led me to become an intuitive spiritual coach. And I work with people who are going through faith transitions of all kinds. I work with women, mostly, predominantly, I work with women. And the entire Aura Soul Institute was born out of a desire to provide a space for people who want to connect with the divine, who want to understand that there is a divine feminine, that there is, that there is no divine without the both the masculine and the feminine. People who want to be able to find themselves in the divine. Women who want to see themselves in the image of God. Women who want to find purpose in their life. They want to find their soul's purpose. One of the things that religion really caused, my religious background caused quite a crisis in my 40s when my two oldest children moved out. And of course, I still have my youngest with us, and she will always be with us. She is 14 now, but she will always mentally be like a three-year-old. But she goes to school every day, and she will always kind of have that school environment for her to go and learn and have people work with her. And I was sitting at home alone. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any friends. I had spent my entire life homeschooling my children. And now that my oldest were gone, and I was spending 8 hours a day at home alone with nothing to do. I didn't have a degree. I was told not to get a degree. I got married at 19 years old. I could have obtained a degree by the time I had my first child. So I had my daughter when I was 22. But I didn't even try because I was just supposed to be a mom. And you are not supposed to delay getting married or having children for a degree in any way, shape, or form. It was just very much downplayed for women. But when I found my children gone and I had nothing to do, and to try to be in that space and try to find purpose in your life where you don't know where to go. It's like, do I go back to college at 43 years old? Do I, you know, I don't want to go flip burgers, but I also don't want to just sit around the house all day. What do I do? And I combined a lot of the education that I'd had over the last 20 years, my passions of studying herbs, and I had studied spirituality and a lot of different healing modalities over the years with various schools. And I wanted to bring my spiritual understanding and become a life coach for women to help women find their place, their soul's purpose, to empower them and help them break free of any oppressive things that they've been taught and to find their true purpose. And that is really where my passion lies as a spiritual coach. And the RSOL Institute offers classes on all kinds of things. More and more classes will be added. I am feverishly working behind the scenes on the energetics of herbs classes. If you are already an herbalist or you've studied herbs, this class will take it to the next level to help you understand them on a more fundamental energetic level so that they will be more powerful. There will be classes on essential oils. There will be classes on healing stones at different frequencies, on sound healing. There, it is just a place where, for me, this is where I landed and found the greatest peace and love and joy. And it's something that I want to share with other people that may be on the same journey that I'm on. So I hope that you found this story interesting or helpful in some way. I know it's just kind of my basic spiritual journey, but I know that everyone goes on a spiritual journey. And as you mature, if you are able to mature in your spiritual beliefs, part of maturing is asking questions and seeking understanding. And if your religion doesn't allow for that and doesn't allow you to question the fundamental beliefs and why they have them and where they came from and really grow into maturity in your spiritual beliefs, you are in a cult. You are not in a spiritual space. And I learned that very, very, very clearly. if your religion suppresses your voice and suppresses who you are fundamentally, it is not a healthy space for you. I realized I didn't belong in organized religion. Why did I not belong there? Because they don't want me there. Say, oh, yes, we do. No, you don't. If you don't want to hear my voice, if you don't want to hear my thoughts, my opinions, if my voice doesn't matter, I don't belong there. And I think a lot of women are coming to that place of saying, I don't belong here. I'm not wanted here. And truly, you're not. They say that they want you. They want your butt in the seat. They want your 10% tithing. They want the fact that you can have babies. But the reality is, they don't want you. They don't want your voice. They don't want your opinions. They don't want your decisions. They just want you to sit down and shut up and do what they tell you. It's not a place where you belong. Because a place where you belong is a place where you are loved, where you are valued. Every part of you is valued. Your opinion is valued. Your thoughts are valued. Your decisions are valued. And your thoughts and opinions and decisions have weight. In order for you to truly have value, your thoughts, your opinions, and your decisions have weight. If they don't, you aren't wanted and you aren't valued. It's plain and simple. And I can tell you, there is a space beyond atheism, and there is a space beyond Christianity, and there is a space beyond religion where things fall into place and become beautiful. Where God isn't mean and vengeful and scary, and God is not there to throw people in hell or cause suffering or cause pain. And when you start to understand the purpose of things, it becomes beautiful. It becomes comforting. And if that is a journey that you are on to find that peace and that joy in your heart, a connection to God all on your own, this is definitely a space for you. Because a lot of people say the universe or source or use a lot of words, the divine. But I use the word God. And the reason that I do is because to not use that word would be to go against what I know inside myself. Some of us have had deep and profound experiences that we can't deny. But those of us that have had them, don't try to make money off of them. Don't try to create religions off of them. We hold them in our hearts, just an inner knowing of God. And that's where I am. But I want you to know that there is so much more about spirituality outside of organized religion. And it's a beautiful place. And I know I have continued rambling. I'm sorry, I could talk all day about this. But I hope that you will continue on this journey with me. We will be talking about all kinds of things. We'll be talking about angels. We'll be talking about spirit guides. We'll be talking about guardian angels. We will delve into the beautiful world of herbs, but we're going to talk about herbs from a spiritual perspective and an energetic perspective. We are going to talk about God or the divine from the masculine and feminine perspective. So you will hear me use feminine references to God as well. I know that freaks a lot of Christians out, but it's reality. That belief was very, very, very steeped in the Old Testament. Bible scholars know this. They also know that when Asherah was turned into idol worship, and the reason why. So there is absolutely a feminine divine. It's just something that's been hidden from you. And as a woman, I can tell you, connecting with the feminine divine is the most deeply spiritual thing that you can come to find in your spirituality, is to see that you as a woman are absolutely in the image of God in every way, shape, or form. That there is a feminine divine. So we're going to be talking about the feminine divine. We will be talking about essential oils, but used in beautiful ways. We will be talking about the power and spirit of the plants that are concentrated in those oils and the ways that we use them. We will be talking about healing stones and the frequencies that they carry. And all of the world is here to love you and to support you. And that's what I really want you to come to realize, is that on the deepest level, the world is created to love and support you in every way. And I know so many of you have probably suffered trauma and deep pain at the hands of other people. And I want to hold space and honor that reality, because this world is not easy, and it's not all happiness and flowers and roses and joy. It is deep, deep pain. And I do work with clients on inner child healing and coaching, intuitive spiritual coaching through inner child healing and through life transformations as well. And part of that is processing a lot of the emotions, a lot of the trauma, and a lot of the experiences that you've been through, holding space and feeling, but at the same time, being able to move through those things. And you can get to a beautiful place in your life. And I want you to know that, because I have suffered deep trauma in my own life over and over again. And finding meditation and finding a lot of things outside of even just modern society or Orthodox religion, organized religion, there is a whole spiritual realm that you have access to that can provide such deep and profound healing for you inside your heart, inside yourself, to where you can find joy again, where you can find peace, where your life can be transformed in a beautiful way. And that's what I'm here to help facilitate for the people that I work with and the message that I want to share. So I hope that this was enjoyable for you. I hope that maybe some of this resonated with you. And maybe someone else might find benefit from my story. I really appreciate you listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please click on the link in the RSS feed and donate a small amount to help support this podcast, so that we can continue spreading this message of love and peace and transcendence to others. And I hope to see you in the next episode.